So when people see my raw numbers, sometimes they're like, what? But then when you break it down, it's really just putting one foot in front of the other and getting that first $100,000 in sales, then getting that first million in sales. And every single start, that those are the goals. The first 10,000 in sales, the first 100,000 in sales, the first million in sales.
Hello and welcome to the Small Business School. My name is Craig Staley, 20-year retail veteran, e-commerce practitioner, and entrepreneur. Each week, I will interview a new small business owner that we can learn from to take our businesses to the next level. Now, let's go. My guest today is Andrea Lake. She's a serial entrepreneur, having run 14 businesses since 1999. Andrea was also a contestant on The Apprentice in 2006. So, being election day, of course I had to ask her at least one question about President Trump. All that aside, Andrea is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to running a business and gives some great advice to anyone looking to do the same. So, without further ado, Andrea Lake. All right. I'd like to welcome my next guest. She is Andrea Lake. She's a serial entrepreneur and owner of multiple businesses, including StickerJunkie.com and Delinquent Distribution. How are you today, Andrea?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Can you give the listeners a little bit of your personal background before we get started?
Sure thing. So I have started 14 companies since I was 18 years old. Most of them are in pop culture. I've owned Rhythm Sticks, StickerJunkie.com, Anti-Establishment Clothing, Yoga Junkie, Delinquent Distribution, Teacher, which teaches people how to start t-shirt courses, and a couple of tech companies.
So thanks for the background. Can you talk about how you started your first business early on?
Sure. I think it's helpful for listeners to know when they hear where I am right now that I really started with nothing. For the first 7 years, I didn't even think of myself as an entrepreneur. I just thought I was lucky that I knew how to make these things. I made these gelling toys. They were called Rhythm Sticks. There's those toys where you hold one in each hand, use the two you're holding, a third one around, and people just started buying them. So I went to concerts, and then I started going to little stores around San Diego where I lived and selling them. I was 17 years old. And then I met someone who owned a t-shirt company and was selling $1 million a year worth of t-shirts. And I was like, that is all the money in the world. I am going to go do that. And he was like, well, you know, that's only $100,000 in profit. And I was like, still all the money in the world. I am going to go do that. And so I started Anti-Establishment Clothing, which was an offensive t-shirt company. And then I really quickly realized that the money wasn't selling to chain stores, and that instead of being an offensive t-shirt, it should be a funny, mildly irreverent t-shirt that would sell better. And then that's how I got into Delinquent Distribution, which ended up getting into licensing and sales distribution. And I owned the exclusive distribution rights on Minecraft, World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, Walking Dead, all the biggest gaming and geek properties in the world for their apparel, their merchandise, t-shirts, patches, pins, hats, etc.
Wow, that's amazing. How did you get all those brands?
Just through the luck of the draw.
A lot of hard work, I'm guessing.
Do you know, it really does take 10 years to become an overnight success. So I started acquiring licensing rights and sales distribution rights on teeny tiny companies in 1999. And a couple of them got very big. And one of them, Jinx Clothing, which your listeners, if they are video gamers, are aware of, at jinx.com, J-I-N-X.com, called me up one day, and I own their licensing rights. And they're like, hey, how do you do that? How do you get licensing rights? So I explained it to them. I sent them a contract, and they called me back 2 weeks later and said, we just got the licensing rights on Blizzard Gaming, and we're too big for you now. We're too big for you to own our licensing rights now, so we need our contract. And I said, hey, no problem, but how about this? I have all the connections to the chain stores, so how about if I retain your sales rights? And I will be the concierge between the buyers at the chain store and you guys. And they said, yes. And so that's how it happened.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, you've started 14 different businesses. What motivates you to keep starting new businesses all the time?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it might be something a little bit wrong with me. It could be. But, you know, I really do. I just love business. And so I've always thought it was super funny that my passion, my true passion is business. I started a tech hub, Entrepreneur House. I lived with a bunch of tech entrepreneurs. And I would just do business for free. So my passion could just as easily be gardening. And so the same reason why you would put in a different garden and grow different stuff every year is the same reason why I would get a new idea and start a new company.
So is it kind of the process and the game of building it up?
It's just, I just get an idea in my head that I feel like has got to exist in reality. So the newest one that I'm doing has been, I always thought it would be my opus company. It's called the Power Chick Mafia. It's just like a combination of all the most successful women in the world. And I just saw that that didn't exist and it was something I personally wanted to exist. So a lot of it's stuff like that where I just see an opportunity in the market or it's something that I actually want that doesn't currently exist.
So you're talking about these ideas. Mm-hmm. What process do you have? I'm sure every day you're coming up with new ideas. What's your process to kind of weed out those ideas and only spend time on the good ones? Because obviously time is for sure your most valuable asset.
Yeah, that is something that not just me, but all of my partners, because I really do tend with a lot of hardcore CEO types. It's just a constant weaning process because we can be like, oh, bright, shiny, and then turn around and go in another direction. So my personal process is I usually get an idea. I hang on to it. It goes onto the whiteboards until it rises to the top. And that does sound like an oversimplification, but that's actually exactly what happens. Like I will sit down once a quarter or sometimes twice a year and just list out every single potential revenue route that we have and then assess with my team which one makes the most sense for us to go down next. Otherwise, I would be starting something new every week and be like, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Maybe we should go to that. It's really easy to get, for me personally, to get distracted or to load my plate too high. So it is a constant process of culling and seeing which ones we really want to put our time and effort and dollars towards.
Have you learned over time to kind of fail fast and say, okay, we thought this was the right idea, but this isn't working?
Yeah, yes. I love that term, fail fast. Yes, absolutely. We do MVPs. For any of your listeners that don't know, that means minimum viable product. And what that is when you put the least amount of dollars and resources and time and energy into something to see if you can get a return. One of my favorite things that I always say is make money first. So if that company or idea doesn't make money, do not allocate your time into it. So we do figure that out really quickly. For example, during the pandemic, right in the beginning, like March 1st or March 3rd or something, we trademarked Quarantini and we threw up a site called Quarantini.rocks and it was really cool, fun activities for people to do while they're on lockdown. So we had cooking shows and my business partner that started Tap Out had an MMA show that he would go on and do. And we just had all sorts of different fun people. We had a magic show and a hypnotist and a tarot readers so that people, when they're bored at their house, could have more interactive entertainment versus like a passive listening exercise like Netflix or Hulu. We realized that to make it go hyper-viral would cost a lot of money. And so I talked to some entertainment VCs and they were like, yeah, we will invest $1 million in you. But if we do that, we expect you to be full-time, full attention on this. And we just realized that wasn't the direction we wanted to go in.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what one of your companies, that Delinquent Distribution, I think I read you've sold over $40 million worth of t-shirts and to 4,500 plus stores. I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur, you see those numbers and you think, wow, you know, and you're envious of those numbers. But, you know, obviously, like you said, it's an overnight success that probably was 10, 15 years in the making. What does it really take to build a big business like that?
Well, it's actually over 40 million t-shirts and 270 million in sales for that.
Oh my gosh.
Company. Yes. The overall I've done about maybe a bit over 400 million in sales, around 440 million combined from all of my companies. However, that is aggregated over 27 years and many, many companies. So when people see my raw numbers, sometimes they're like, what? But then when you break it down, it's really just putting one foot in front of the other, you know, and getting that first $100,000 in sales, then getting that first million in sales and every single company start, that those are the goals. The first 10,000 in sales, the first 100,000 in sales, the first million in sales. And each different vertical does have a formula for stuff like that. So with clothing, I partnered with my business partners from Tap Out and Diepic and started a company called Teacher, which is TEACHER.com, which teaches people how to start t-shirt companies. And we have a course that literally teaches people how to do that first 10,000 in sales, because there's just a process to it. And I think that it gets so overwhelming for people when they're just starting out because they don't know what the process is. But after you've started 4, 5, or 6 companies, it's just a formula. You know, you do this first, then you do this.
It's repeatable.
That's right. It's totally repeatable. And it's teachable. You know, we've taught the guys from Combat Flip Flops. They came to us. They were $40,000 in debt when they came to us, and we taught them how to start a t-shirt company. They were about to close their doors and go out of business, and now they're doing 7 million annual sales. They got on Shark Tank. Like, it's, this stuff is stuff that you can carry forward and teach to up and coming entrepreneurs. It's very, 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 very tactical.
That's great. So, you know, one of the other things I know you did is you started Sticker Junkies back in 1999, and that's kind of the early days of the internet. You know, I remember in high school, which was not too, maybe 95 range, I remember my science teacher telling me about the internet, and there's these message boards, and there's explaining it to me. And then 4 years from that date, you created a custom online sticker store. Do you have a technical background, or how did you accomplish that?
You know, my mom is a computer scientist, so she was the only woman in her graduating class in 1978. So I was exposed to the internet way, but the early days like that, where it really just used to be, I mean, kids these days do not realize, but it really did just used to be message boards that people would go on and chat. But I was following the internet from very young. And so I knew that when I launched Anti-Establishment in 1998, that I wanted to have a website for it and figured out how to get one built. I'm not technical myself. And then Sticker Junkie followed in 1999, because I just thought, well, there's all these people on here. This is going to be ubiquitous. This is going to be a thing where every single person has a computer in their house in the next 10 years. And I don't know how I knew that, but I knew for sure that that was true.
Yeah, which is impressive for you, because people, I think people forget that in 1999, even into the early 2000s, people were kind of so-so on this internet fad. Is this going to stick around type of thing? It wasn't a for sure like it is today. So that's impressive that you were on top of that quote-unquote trend that back then. You know, I know you were also on Apprentice. Can you talk, you made a deep run on Apprentice. I think you were through week 9. Would you say Apprentice was a good measure of what it takes to be an entrepreneur?
No.
No, not at all.
Not even,
it's a TV show, right?
Not even actually a little bit. I know, it was just a television. It was like a game show. It was a contest game show, which I actually didn't realize, because I didn't own a television. So I had never seen the show before I was on it. So I went on there thinking, I'm going to meet all these badass entrepreneurs. That was absolutely not the case. So I didn't understand what reality TV was, because I never watched television ever growing up. So yeah.
Did you make any relationships from that show that you still talk to today, or anything valuable come out of it?
I did. Yeah. So there were 4 of us total that were just super hardcore business people, and we all found each other, and we were just looking wide-eyed and bewildered of what on earth did we get ourselves into, because it was just a kooky reality game show. But the 4 of us just became thick as thieves, and we're all still really good friends. Yeah. And they've all gone on to have very, very, very successful lives and successful careers. And yeah, one of them's even a congressman. He's a congressman in Florida. Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So it's just by chance, I record my episodes, you know, usually a month or two in advance. And just by chance, your episode is going to air on November 3rd, with Election Day. So you were around President Trump back in 2005, a fair amount. What would you say? Do you feel like the man you spent time with in 2005 is the same man that's our president today? Is it the same? What you see is what you get, or is it different?
No, honestly, not even remotely, because I had been involved in politics and he was a Democrat when I knew him, and pro-choice, and it was really, really different. And he also was a lot more coherent than he is today.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has the same one-liners and he communicates with people in basically the same way. So it'd be interesting to see what happens on Election Day.
We will find out shortly after this airs. So
we will.
So what would you say is maybe the biggest challenge that you've faced in business so far? And how did you overcome it?
Well, it sounds funny to say this, and I think that this happens with everyone. It's honestly just self-doubt. And even still, with as much success as I've had, with as many businesses as I've launched, just no matter what level you're playing on business in, you're going to brush up against thinking, did I do this right? Did I really just make everything fail? Can I do this again? So it's really just building confidence in what I'm doing, or never sharing my ideas with people who are going to destroy them. This is always my advice to starting out entrepreneurs. If you share your idea of what you're launching, share it with somebody who is going to have your back for sure. And just try it. Don't put a ton of money into it at first, but just try it. And don't listen to people that tell you you can't do it, because there's always going to be those kind of people. And then the second thing is, watch your bottom line. Make sure that you're not spending way more than you're making. Just make sure you're not getting yourself into a big hole.
That's good advice about who to share with, because I feel like sometimes you'll share a new idea with someone and they think that they project maybe their own fear of failure onto you. And I think it's out of a good place. They don't want you to fail, but those negative thoughts are likely going to keep you from starting.
Yeah, I have a really great story I think will be inspirational for your listeners. One of my good friends, Matt Clifford, started Barnana, which is a huge food company now, but it's fried bananas and they look disgusting and I don't like fried bananas. So he's showing me this stuff and he's giving me this pitch for these packages. He's probably 23 years old at the time. This is 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I taste it. And to me, to my palate, it is the worst thing I've ever tasted.
Yeah.
And I just had no reaction. I was like, you know what? If you're passionate about this product, you go get it. Like, I believe in you. Don't spend too much money on this. Like, just go all of the advice I always give. Mm-hmm. He took over the keto world. He probably has $50 million annual sales now, end caps and Whole Foods, you know, 10, 12 years later. Like, something that every single person can say, oh, this is going to fail. They don't know. If you think you have something that people will buy, test it out and see if people buy.
Yeah.
And he's just crushed it. He went to all of the CrossFit training places and sold out of them. And I was flummoxed. I could not believe it, because I am not a fan of dried bananas, but boy, did he kill it.
Well, that was great of you to give that advice, even though to you, it was terrible.
Yes, yes. And if you think somebody's idea is terrible, but they're not spending the farm on it, they're not dropping their whole life savings into it, you know what? Just zip it and just say, just try it, see how it goes. Don't spend too much money on it. Take $1,000 or $500 or whatever it is and see if you can sell a bunch of them. And if you do, go for it, because you just don't know.
Yeah. So what would you say on the opposite side has been the best moment in your business's history?
Oh, wow. Honestly, probably when I got the Blizzard gaming contracts, because it's a hilarious story, because that was obviously the Minecraft contracts were far, far bigger than Blizzard gaming. Mm-hmm. I am Blizzard owned World of Warcraft, Diablo, and StarCraft. I had never heard of World of Warcraft. I had never heard of Blizzard gaming. And I got the phone call from the guys at Jinx. And then I called one of my chain stores, Hot Topic. And they were like, can you come in next Tuesday? We have a $4 million budget for you this week.
Holy smokes.
That's right. And I was like, yeah, I could totally be there next Tuesday. That sounds great. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that was I was doing a very lot of sales, but I was not doing $4 million a week in sales. And then that's what those contracts started to bring in, is those hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. So that was just through the roof, totally unexpected. I was not a gamer. The whole thing was floored me. And that very night, I met the guy who invented the Xbox, who I became really good friends with. And I told him that I had just gotten the World of Warcraft contracts. And he was like, who are you? You are not a gamer. You clearly do not know what you're doing. You clearly do not know what you're talking about with gaming, but you must have some magic. You must have some juju going on. So you should come up to Microsoft and you should tour Xbox. And we might want to give you our licensing rights as well, because you have some magic that I want a piece of. It's crazy.
That is crazy. That, I mean, literally just fell into your lap pretty much.
It was like magic. But I did have a company that was on Oprah and I got to meet her. That was pretty magical as well. But yeah.
And what company was that?
That was called Zoco Inc. We did subscription-based websites for best-selling spiritual authors. It was really, really early. I actually lost a lot of money in that company because it launched in like 2003. So it was just too early for the internet. But I did get to meet Oprah. So, you know,
a little bit of that.
That's right.
Who do you consider a mentor? And what would you say is the most important lesson they've taught you?
I do have a mentor. He is exceedingly successful. He's a billionaire guy. He does not like to be mentioned by name. He's not famous. Mm-hmm. Listeners wouldn't know who he was anyways. But he gave me a couple of very important lessons. Number one was to put a dollar figure on your time. So at the time, I was like, 25 years old. And I said, okay, well, my dollar figure is $20 an hour, which to me was a very lot of money at the time. And he said, okay, great. That means that you are no longer shipping boxes. You are no longer processing your own orders. You are no longer doing XYZ. Anything that you can hire out for less than that $20 an hour, do it. That was really frightening. I didn't have like full-time employees back then. So I hired the first employee and I made a second rule on top of his rule, which was every single minute that she was there, I was making sales calls. So I was generating income for the company. So the first, and I was paying her $8 an hour, which back then was like a fair, that was like a lot of money. That was a fair price, it was 1999. So during that 4 hour shift that she made $32, I made $500 in sales. It might even have been $1,500 in sales. I can't remember, but it was a lot of sales. And when it was time for her to go that day, I said, you're full time starting tomorrow because all I'm doing from now on is making sales calls. And that was the best one. And the other one, what?
Oh, I was just going to say that had to be eye-opening.
It
really drove home that lesson.
It was. And that was the first year of that company that was anti-establishment clothing. I had done $150,000 in sales in the first year doing everything myself. The second I hired her on, I did $1 million in sales the second year because the only thing that I put my time towards was making sales. That was all that I would do from that moment forward. The other thing was that he always says, that's one of my favorite lines, is everyone pays tuition. So if I had a really big failure, I had a really big failure once, I lost over $1 million and I was devastated. I was like crawl on the floor depressed. And he was like, Andrea, Everyone pays tuition. Don't even worry about it. Don't think about it for a second. This is just your tuition. Go out there and make more money. You're fine.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I ask everybody this question, but if you could hop into a time machine and go back to the day that you launched your first business, what advice would you give your past self?
Buy Google, buy Bitcoin, don't ever sell stock. No. Do you know what it would really be? Like you're going to win. You're going to win at this. Don't worry. Don't spend a minute of your time worrying. It's the most horrible wasted expenditure of energy that you could have. Whatever you do, be solution oriented. If you can't be solution oriented in that moment, if something has really gone wrong for you, go take a walk. Do not try and figure it out when you're in that freaked out space.
Sure.
Yeah. Sit down, meditate, take a walk, do yoga, play with your dog, play with your kids, do whatever you have to do to get into a better feeling space, and then go back to the problem with solution orientation. Because I spent years of my life worrying about stuff that like is not even a big, like I can't even remember what it is now. So I do my best now not to worry. And stuff that I could be worrying about now is far, 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 far bigger than it was back then. But I'm just like, yeah, I'm just not going to spend my time that way.
And probably 20 years from now, what you're worrying about will be far, far bigger than what it is today.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope. So I want to thank you. You're offering 15% off for Small Business School listeners for 30 days after the podcast airs at stickerjunkie.com. And they just use the code SBS15. We'll put it in the show notes and really appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
So where can our listeners find out more about you and your businesses?
They can find out about all of our active companies at andrealake.com.
Awesome. Well, Andrea, thanks so much for being with us today. I think we learned quite a bit from you today.
Oh, thanks for having me, and have just a great rest of your day.
I really loved Andrea's story about her friend Matt, who co-founded Barnana. He asked her to try his banana snack early on, and she hated it. Now, had she told him that, maybe it would have deterred him from moving forward. Instead, she said, you know what? If you're passionate about this product, you go get it. She gave him some practical advice. Don't bet the farm on it. Just test it out. See if it works. Today, Barnana sells millions of dollars of product to grocery stores like Whole Foods. I think the moral of the story here is, if a friend of ours comes to us with a business they want to launch, instead of coming up with 1,000 reasons why it won't work, we should come up with at least one reason it will and encourage them to press forward. If you're a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other grow their businesses. Join the community and let's help each other take our businesses to the next level. We'll see you there. If you'd like to learn more about our guest today or be a future guest on the Small Business School, go to craigsdaily.com/podcast for more info. And of course, it would mean the world to me if you'd click subscribe or write a review for the Small Business School in your podcast app of choice. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.